Welcome to the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, intended to equip and encourage business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs. Taught by active business owner, best-selling author, and teacher, Sean Castrina.
I hope you're all doing well today. We're going to have a great podcast. This is your host, Sean Castrina, with the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast. I got some great guests with me today. I have Michelle Garrison and Daniel Moss. They are the founders of We and Goliath. They do virtual and hybrid events for nonprofits. And we're going to find out their entrepreneurial story, find out a little bit about their company, what we can learn from what they've done, maybe some mistakes they've made, some things they've done right. Michelle, Daniel, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having us.
All right. I always like to start out with, how did you all become business partners? So let me start with that.
Well, we basically merged agencies. So Michelle was doing branding and online entrepreneurship, marketing. I was doing web design and digital marketing. And we both have a background in events. So we sort of merged agencies to create this virtual and hybrid event company that has a focus on design and marketing.
But also Daniel marketed himself to me online. So we're a couple.
Yeah. I have all my businesses are partnerships. So I love partnerships. I believe that you find the one person can do the one thing that you most need that you can't do yourself. And it would be hard to hire the person to do it. You know, it'd be a tough, you know, if you lost that person every year, it'd be a really exhaustive search. So I'm a fanatic about partnerships. And I do think they're the way to do it. I always say the greatest entrepreneurs in the world were partnerships in about 80% of those companies. It's shocking when you look at, you know, Microsoft, Apple, Warren Buffett, Elon Musk. Okay, these are the foremost, you know, entrepreneurs of our generation. And you just go all the way down and they're partnerships. So tell me this. So let's just kind of first get to your entrepreneurial journey. Michelle, I know you're an entrepreneur. I get Daniel might be, but kind of get me into like how you, before any of this, like you're like, I don't want to work for anybody. I want to do my own thing. I always like to hear how that got started.
I think for myself, I was one of those types that even as a kid, I was creating businesses. It's just in my nature to scheme up new ideas and try to sell things and see if people will be interested. But then on top of that, I've been really into climate issues and ecological issues. So I've always looked for solutions to help solve the world's problems. It's been a very up and down journey in that world, but I would say that education has driven me through a lot of and helped me to persevere. Because I've wanted to just help to educate other people about the potential of solutions and how those could impact the world.
Okay. I could get in a great debate with you before the end of this podcast. It'd be fun though. It'd be really good. I have a great illustration of what I think the average person feels about climate change that I'll share with you because I know you're passionate. I can see it in your face. She's already getting all wired up. She's ready. She's ready. But I think that I can explain it from a 12-year-old standpoint. How about you?
That'd be interesting.
No, I'm getting ready to go into it as soon as you're done.
I've had a mix of being an entrepreneur and being an employee, both like doing marketing and web design, marketing strategy, events. And so I'm in our partnership more on the implementer integrator role. Yeah. Whereas Michelle's more, I call her brain, but yeah, she's like the visionary.
you're the implementer and it's a perfect combination actually. I am more like Michelle in that I come up with the ideas, the new revenue streams, and then I need a dot your I's, cross your T's, put in the time, make what I want to do kind of happen. And it is a good, kind of a good mix. All right. We're going to jump into some climate change. All right. So this is how this is how I look at it. Every time AOC opens her mouth, my head explodes because she has the ability to take something that I view as serious, climate change. I understand the severity of it and I get it. But when she does, the world's going to end in 8 years and all of that. I hate hysteria because I'm a faith-based guy and I believe God created this thing and he ain't letting us screw it up as much as we'd like to think. I think he'd bring it to a close. I don't think he's going to give us the power to bring it to an end. I think he may allow us to bring it to, but that's just me. So that has nothing to do with what I was prefacing it. But now I'm going to go to my lemonade theory on it. The world is 7.5 billion people. and we would like to have fresh lemonade. And I'm squeezing lemonades. Every time I squeeze a lemonade, somebody walks by and pisses in my cup. But I really want lemonade, but I squeeze lemonade and I stir it. And somebody comes by and pisses in my cup. So I can never really get the lemonade that I want. And the reason I explain that is that unless you get a massive global agreement, as long as China's pissing in the lemonade, Russia's pissing in the lemonade, the Arabian company, all those Middle East, they're all pissing in the lemonade. We're playing, it's like playing Monopoly where we agree to roll only two dice. Okay, so we're gonna change our entire lifestyle, our entire financial setup. We're gonna change everything in America. Now, we only make up about 370 million people. We make up 5% of the world's population. We are one ice cube in this lemonade mix.
So by population, but not by impact, actually.
No, I understand that. But even if we go impact, we're still China. Electric batteries. Okay, the batteries in an electric car to dispose of those. I mean, I'm like a complete moron. I wouldn't have brought the subject up. But my point is I understand the initiative. I understand the objective. I think that people don't, I really don't think they've looked into, if somebody would come to me, I'm a decently rational person. I can agree with the Democratic issue. I can agree with a Republican issue. I really think I can go either way if something makes sense. I've never smoked pot, but I don't think it should be illegal. There you go. That's kind of like my thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. My idea about guns is yeah, I think you should damn well have a background check. No, I'd prefer people under the age of 21 not having them. No, I don't think a gun should shoot multiple bullets. If you need a machine gun to shoot a deer, okay? So you can see where, and I'm probably more Republican, but I can look at any issue and go, no, that doesn't make sense. I don't believe a bullet should be able to be shot multiple times by a non-police military, blah, blah, blah. So I feel like I'm a fairly, you know, I can look at almost nearly any subject and go, okay, that's a little too far this way, that's a little too far that way. Climate, my view of it is that they're trying to fix it so fast that you got to sell a story that people believe. It's like casting a vision for a company. I can cast a vision, but if my team doesn't get it, or they don't believe it's real, or the sacrifice I'm asking them to make doesn't equal the payoff. I believe that the fight is real. I believe it's, but I think that let me put it this way, my opinion, the communicator on this subject has not been good, because there hasn't been a great communicator. When you put John Kerry up there in front of me, flying in private jets, who's as snooty as they come. Okay. When you put these guys in their 20,000 square foot houses with multiple houses, okay, you're not going to sell climate change with me with John Kerry. I apologize.
No, I would agree with you. And I think historically the campaigns behind not only climate, but a number of issues have been marketed and represented poorly. I think that this should not be a Democrat or Republican issue. I think this is a global issue that we all need to talk
openly
about. It's a
Gandhi type of thing. This is like a Mandela. This is somebody from it can't be United States. It has to be somebody with such global gravitas.
Yes.
That like when Nelson Mandela spoke, he spoke across the globe. You know what I'm saying? There's people of that magnitude that when they speak, their credibility expands beyond their border.
Like the Pope, for example.
I was going to go with that.
Dramatic climate change and international agreement. And also the head of the United Nations is getting desperate because corporations and governments both aren't meeting their agreements. They keep making these big agreements, but it's sort of greenwashing. They make a promise and they don't keep it up. And we are getting close to irreversible tipping points that are very scary. And it's a little hard to know how to move forward because corruption is holding back the changes that do need to happen. At the big levels.
And it's not a new thing. This is something that we've known about for so many years now, decades. You know, science has been clear that this is happening. And the deniers of it, just it doesn't make sense beyond the fact that there's a lot of corporate greed. There's a lot of need for more income for some reason. And that income equality just keeps getting greater and greater because we're allowing the corporations to come in and make decisions that impact the rest of humanity.
One really interesting thing to me is it's becoming clear that even the recycling as a campaign was almost like created by oil companies to put the burden back on individuals, saying you need to change your lifestyle to clean up for our mess. And they keep oil companies for 30 years, like Michelle said, they have been trying to pass the buck on the responsibility for this, and also greenwash the whole impact that, oh, it's not very problematic. I think they need to be paying for the mess, paying for the damage of the life cycle of their damage. And it, essentially right now, it's not about individuals. We can't fix this problem by having a better lifestyle, especially not recycling. Unfortunately, it doesn't even get recycled most of the time.
Hey, that's what I was going to say. I'm convinced my recycle goes to my trash bin.
Right. Unfortunately, it doesn't make that much of a difference. What we need is citywide, not nationwide, huge company-wide changes and systems. And we need to stop buying into this thing that we need to make individual sacrifices. No, we need to push the leaders and the ultra rich to change the systems on big levels.
And we just need to stop fighting with each other.
I believe in just rational. Two good people can completely disagree on a topic. It doesn't make either one of them evil. Maybe it makes one of them less enlightened in a certain area because someone studied it more and more passionate. And I kind of get that. I just look at things from like a rational standpoint. And I'm like, if you want to sell me on climate change, give me a 10-year, and everybody say, well, we're going to be dead in 10. I'm going to go, okay, but guess what? We've been around for 5,000 or so. I think we'll make it 10. Okay, so because you're not going to sell me on 3 to 5 years. So give me 10, because my brain can get around 10. Then tell me what the government's first going to sacrifice globally. Our government, we're going to stop doing this. Like, this is our footprint. This is our first initiative. Then the next thing is all new buildings being built. The new code is this. Okay, we're going to have that implemented within 5 years. And then we're going to bring down the cost of electric cars dramatically. Matter of fact, we're going to maybe create something to where people that are executing, they're not even a profit. The cost, it somehow we do it as a government agency, just like you make mailboxes and stuff like that, that we're going to build a base level car that's so inexpensive and electric that the 50% that can't afford one can. I mean, if we're really sold into it, we're going to create a $15,000 electric car.
Yeah, and we'll subsidize wind and solar and all the other things.
However you do it, but this is my point. My
we're sort of there.
Sell me on 10, but nobody can ever, no, an AOC gets up and speaks, I want to bang my head against a computer. When John Kerry gets up and speaks, I want to go fill my car up with diesel. You know what I mean? I mean, when I see these guys stepping off of private jets, right? I see the president with a motorcade 20 cars deep. In other words, do something visually in front of me.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. And well, I love AOC personally. Not everybody needs to love AOC. Yeah.
I love my big orange guy a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean,
every time he opened his mouth, I wanted to beat my head against the coffee table sometimes.
Who cares at the end of the day about these people that we watch on the TV? Yeah. Like, this isn't about that. This is about, like, let's connect more with nature. Let's connect more with each other. Let's get real about what's happening around us and stop absorbing ourselves in devices and media that's going to dictate the way that we think and we feel. Instead, you know, let's just come back to more reality in ourselves and be more healthy too. I mean, that's the other thing about being an entrepreneur. I think that the drive for financial gain, the drive for growth can be so demanding sometimes that it puts pressure on us and it can break down our health if we don't prioritize our health above everything else.
I think, stress. I mean, I'm as go-getter, but I also agree that when you have stress, it leads to so many cancer and things of that. Your health, it does. And in regards to AOC, this is what I will say, and I'll say the same thing about Bernie Sanders. Completely disagree with both of them to the end screen, but they believe what they're saying. I genuinely believe when Bernie Sanders opens his mouth, even though he's got a nice little $2 million little house sitting on the other side. But he believes it. And I genuinely believe when AOC opens her mouth, she believes in that. And I love authenticity, even if I completely and utterly disagree with you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And I think on both sides of that, I think they are, you know, formidable. And they're very authentic, and it's you know, it's what it's their DNA, just like my big orange guy in his wall and things like that. I think regardless whether you agree or disagree, I think they're all passionate about that subject matter that they hold dear.
And we need more need more authentic debates in government, in Congress, and not people that are bought off who are saying what they're paid to say, essentially.
So we agree. Hey, listen, but I do agree in closing that subject matter. And this was a great example. Prior to this, I never spoken with you. None of this was prepped. We're completely probably on the different side of the aisles, probably from a political standpoint. But two good people can have a debate, completely, you know, look at something differently and still come to a common thread of decency and how you communicate with it. You know, that's what, when did that go away? Just civil discourse where you could, you know, you go to the town square and you completely disagree. And like, and at the end of it, you go, you give the guy a hug. Hi, okay, I disagree with you, you crazy SOB, but let's go have a pizza and a beer.
Right. Like, isn't that what democracy is supposed to be?
Yeah. It's now I got to hate you and I'm a racist or I'm this or I'm that. Like, I'm none of the above. I'm curious or I'm just not sold on your argument yet. I always tell people, listen, I'm open. I'm just not sold yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like to say, like, internally, we're all the same, right? Like, we all have the same functions that make us alive, human, living beings.
And I think 99% of us want good for our neighbor and want good for the country we live in. I think if you lined up 99 out of 100 and you got to peek into their soul, I do believe that. Well, obviously, you know, it's funny. Our audience is listening to this more because of what we just talked about.
Interesting.
I mean, that's so I led you down there, but there was a reason because I know that's what they want to hear. So tell me, what's the one thing, you know, you're entrepreneurs. Okay. What's the one thing, Michelle, and obviously Daniel can jump in there. The one thing you wish you would have known when you first got started, or that one piece of advice you like to share with entrepreneurs, like, I wish I would have known that.
I touched on it earlier, and I'm really going through this right now. It's really real for me because I was, especially during the pandemic, we got really busy, and it was intense. We were in a growth period. It's exciting when you're in a growth period, and it's exciting to keep building. But I didn't focus on my health. I wasn't checking in with myself. I wasn't doing the things that I needed to do in order to keep my energy up, like going to the gym, went out the door during the pandemic. And I think looking back, I would have been way better off had I prioritized that even over everything else so that I could keep going and not hit burnout. Because now in this point in my life, I'm hitting burnout like I have never experienced before. And it is, egoically challenging.
No, and I agree with you. And if I could throw, because I'm an extraordinarily driven person by nature, and I've been doing this now 30 years, I sandwich my day with me first. I start my day, you know, with some form of exercise, just like 30 minutes. And that's, you know, at least 30 minutes, sometimes an hour, but 30 minutes. And I'm not on my phone. I don't go to my computer. I mean, I'll take a quick view at my phone because I own a company to make sure there's not a fire that happened in the middle of the night. But past that, I don't. And the initial, I want to engage in something. I want it, but I don't. I'm like, no, I am worth 30 minutes. And then I sandwich it at the end of the day, 7 to 7:30 at night. Then that closing 30 minutes where I sit down and kind of, okay, what am I, you know, what happened? What do I need to do tomorrow? Kind of blueprinting my day. It takes like 5 or 10 minutes, but then I read, journal a little bit. And I have learned to sandwich. I used to do it just in the morning, but then I'd be so aggravated by the end of the day that I'd be going to bed. I'm so wired, you know, I got so much in my head, but sandwiching.
Yeah, it's so important. And I'm starting to do that now, but you know, Sean, I knew all of these things, you know, I used to be a meditation addict. Like it's not that I don't know this. It's that I got so busy that I thought I could set that aside that I thought I could really just push through. And the reality of that is completely contrary. Like I should have been more paid more attention to that. And in the end, I believe we would have done even better.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I think I have found when I'm totally stressed out, I'm worthless. My decision-making is not good. I'm not good. You know, I mean, I'm not good to work with and all that. So no, that's great. So obviously working with nonprofits, this is clearly your passion. We've kind of brought that out. So what does the future hold? Why is this such a profitable potential business that you're excited about?
Sure. So with virtual events, they've already obviously like been a huge need during COVID at its peak. And it's continually coming in and out, right? So people keep having to cancel events and do smaller events. So we help them not only make sure that it gets done, but gets done with a high level of quality, of interactivity, and taking advantage of the virtual event benefit being you can have a global audience now. It's not just a local event, it's a national event or even a global event. You can have lower costs, lower environmental impact, and a bigger reach from the same event, either with just an online audience or some in-person audience. So that's what we've been doing. And it's been a huge need. I mean, everybody had to cancel their in-person events at first. Now, most events are hybrid, meaning they want to have their local people in person, but they don't want to lose out on that benefit of reaching people all over the world. So we're helping send cameras and do this live streaming to mix the audiences so that they can connect with each other. They can ask questions remotely. It's a fun set of challenges in this COVID world, basically, to help people putting on events, which is core to a lot of types of businesses, to do so in a way that helps them grow their audience, increase their impact without taking on a whole bunch of tech stress, because there's 100 stressful things to figure out if you're new to that space about how do you do an effective hybrid event. And so we take that off their hands, and being tech geeks and marketing geeks and event organizers, you know, it's something that we really enjoy.
Well, and then on top of that too, all of that and the data that we're able to gather from the virtual technology mixed with the in-person technology is much greater than just the in-person events. So we can take that data and utilize it going forward for other marketing channels and different lead nurturing purposes after the event.
No, I love it. Again, I'm here with Michelle Garrison and Daniel Moss. They are the founders of We and Goliath, a virtual hybrid events, and specifically for nonprofits, as that is your strike zone, correct?
Yeah, not only, but we specialize in that, you know, associations, universities, hospitals, charities, usually national scope organizations like the Urban League, like Berkeley University, like the AFL-CIO. Yeah. We've also worked with companies like GitLab and billion-dollar engineering companies. So it's all about like, if you want to increase the design, the reach, the interactivity of your event, you know, that's kind of our sweet spot.
No, man, I love it. And you know what I love? This podcast was such a great example because nothing was staged and two people can look at something. I just think that we just gave a lesson on how human beings can communicate. Can completely be on the opposite side of something, grasp something in the middle. That's the way you communicate, people.
And we can learn from each other.
I'm Italian, man. We used to argue at every dinner over something. What are you kidding me? And then at the end, you gave him a hug, a kiss on the cheek. You completely disagreed on everything, but then at the end, you grasped something in the middle that you could hold on to.
Yeah, it's so important to be able to learn from each other. Like one of my entrepreneurial tips would be make sure you're learning from your customers about what they really want and why they come to you. And I think we're kind of getting that experience from each other here. We're like from our discussion around climate, I'm learning that it's really important to you that the people who are asking the world to make changes, businesses and governments and individuals, they should be walking the walk and not just talking the talk. They should demonstrate it from their lifestyle and from certain sacrifices that they're willing to make, or else it sounds fake. It seems ingenuine. And to me, maybe that is is less important, is like, okay, does he have a private jet? Yeah, that's a problem, but it doesn't change the message.
And I wouldn't even mind it if he had something that paralleled a sacrifice somewhere. Just right. Show me that you're moving in the direction. What I can't say,
I like that about you.
I don't like inauthenticity. You know, I just don't like, you know what I mean? If you're sold out for something and I don't necessarily agree with it, I'm going to actually want to learn about it because I believe in you as a person. I'm be like, well, I really like that person. I think they're, you know, genuine. Like Obama would be a great example for this. Okay. I'm on the different side of it, but I will tell you this. You want to talk about a communicator. You want to talk about somebody who believed and was sold out. Okay. I mean, I still know his tagline, audacity and hope, 14 years later. I couldn't tell you what Hillary's was to this day. I couldn't tell you what John McCain's was. I couldn't tell you what Mitt Romney's was. Okay. When you're sold out on something, even if I don't necessarily see it the way you do, I'm apt to at least listen to you because you're authentic and you're sold out on it.
Beautiful.
But if you're not, you lost me from the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be passionate, be sincere. That's a really good point.
It is. It wins. It wins. It's like,
it's one of my key values too. Authenticity is, we need more authenticity overall.
Yeah, no, I like it. Listen, this was a great interview. Again, I've had Michelle Garrison and Daniel Mosso, the founder of We and Goliath. How can my audience connect with you both?
Yeah, we're We and Goliath. That's WeAndGoliath on pretty much any social platform or weandgoliath.com. If you put on events, if you're thinking about taking an event, hybrid, meaning adding a virtual audience to your event, reach out. We'll do a free strategy consultation and talk to you about what kind of software you need, what kind of production you need, how you can grow your audience. And I'd love to brainstorm with you.
Great. Hey, nobody teaches more or brings in guests that communicates more in the entrepreneurial space than the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast. We give a lot in a short amount of time. And why is it? Because your host has attention deficit disorder. So that is why. Listen, we're going to talk again tomorrow. You know, the podcast is brought to you by Get Started Marketing. It's pretty simple. Get Started Marketing. If you're not marketing, reach out to Get Started Marketing. Let's talk again soon.